Hello, and welcome to Coffee to Close, where we talk to interesting people with passions and pursuits in and around Brisbane, California, that beautiful yet rowdy, fiercely independent town on the border of San Francisco. Our hope is that you will be inspired and that in the process, we will raise some money for our local nonprofits. Sit back and enjoy. I'm your host, Ron Davis.
We're here today with Vanessa Garcia of the 7 Mile, I should say the famous 7 Mile House in Brisbane, which has been there for a very long time, kind of like proves the theory of reincarnation, because I think that place has come back to life, I don't know how many times, probably since, 1853?
Correct.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about the 7 Mile House, which is going to be fun. We're also going to talk about music and a little bit of this and that. And we have also her cousin here, Gina. And Gina is helping Vanessa write a book, which we'll also talk about. So, Vanessa, why don't you start out by talking a little bit about the 7 Mile House? Maybe how did you come to acquire that and get that going? And maybe we can talk about some of the most fascinating times that ever happened there. Different things. I know that I've sure have had a lot of good times there.
Yeah. So thank you, Ron. Hello, everyone. I like to tell people that 7 Mile has really just landed on my lap. I was never really, I never really sought out to own a bar or restaurant. In fact, my schooling was actually not in that area. I was studying public relations, and then I went into public relations. So I had an office job, but my ex-husband's family, you know, owned the property. And when the business was being sold after 50 years of ownership, the owner could not find the right buyer. There were a lot of takers who wanted to buy the business, but the lease was just really bad. My father-in-law and his partner wanted a month-to-month lease, as opposed to a 5-year lease like everyone else, you know, offers. But they were very old school. They didn't really know, you know, however else to manage their business. And so I was really the only risk taker. It was me and my ex-husband at that time. So we were like, okay, well, sure, let's just do it. And I've always wondered about the place and never really drank or ate there, but I just thought it was really fascinating that, you know, it was an old place and it was an opportunity, and I'm always looking for opportunities. So if it smells good, I'll take it.
So what year was that?
2004.
2004. It's only been that long.
Yeah. Only 2004. Yeah. So when we took it over, I went to bartending school so that I at least know what I'm doing for, you know, a little bit. And then my mom helped me out in the kitchen. But being a homemaker, she's a really good cook. Cooking in the kitchen and a restaurant are two very different things. We only had 5 things on the menu, and after a couple of days, my mom was crying because she couldn't cook fast enough. And my ex-husband was, you know, telling her, go, mom, let's go. You know, the customers are waiting a long time. They need their food now. And it just didn't work out because, you know, it's just totally different. I was still in an office, you know, working in an office at that time, and I had a client whose father used to own the old clam house, and he was consulting at that time, so she brought him in. When he came to 7 Mile in its raw state, the floors were still bad and all that, it really inspired him and reminded him of the old clam house when he first took over.
I could see that.
Yeah. So he fell in love with the place and we got along real well. And I call him my uncle. He's very close to me. He was definitely my mentor in this business. He's a very, very sweet man with a great family. And he put together our menu, which is why our menu is very similar to the old clam house. But our menu did get shaped by our customers who gave us feedback about, you know, what they wanted, what they didn't like, what they didn't sell, the specials we sold, the specials that they loved. So our menu just was shaped by our customers. And when they figured out we were Filipino, they started demanding Filipino food. So now, aside from American Italian food, we have 3 Filipino dishes on the menu that have been actually the most popular things on the menu.
The pork adobo.
The sisig. And the lumpias. Yeah.
They're all good. And I'll tell you, how many items do you have on the menu now?
Oh, that's a lot. Maybe 40.
40.
Yeah. Cooked by my little kitchen.
So I will tell you that I've had everything on the menu.
You have?
Everything.
Really?
Everything at least once, twice. At least once I've had everything.
What's your favorite?
You know what? It changes.
Oh, yeah?
You get hooked on something and then you have to have it. I'm one of these people that go to the restaurant And depending on which restaurant, I'll eat the same thing at that restaurant. Mm-hmm. I'll just go to a different restaurant if I want something else. Mm-hmm. Different, right?
Yeah.
You get into these kind of habits.
Yeah.
But I've eaten there so many times that I have to, like, have, you know, it changes. So the sal picao.
Yes. That's your classic.
That's great. Now, is that Filipino?
It's actually a Filipino Spanish.
Yeah.
It's very popular in the Philippines.
I had it in the Philippines.
You did?
Yeah, it was good.
But it was different, you said.
It was different.
Yeah.
It wasn't as good. It wasn't like home.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of favorites. But lately, you have a new item on the menu.
Yes.
It's the Brazilian fish chowder.
Yeah.
And I will say I've probably had that 8 out of the last 10 times that I've been in it. And it's a new
menu. I love it.
It's a new item. It's like comfort food.
Yeah.
And it's just really, really good.
I'm glad you like it. Yeah, right. Like one of my cooks, you know, basically just said, you know, let's do it. And then I go, okay, because I'm one to try things, you know, since I'm the only owner really right now, it's easy for me to say, okay, let's do it. If it fails, oh well. If it's good, keep doing it. So it's easy.
So how about the music? When did the music become full force? I mean, you have so much music. Every night you have something going on. I don't know how you manage all the details to manage all those people.
Yeah.
So much, but it's just amazing how it's become just the place for live music.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere around here, I don't know how far you'd have to go to get that much quality music. So
thank you.
How did that start? And I know if you have a music background.
Yeah.
We have, both have something in common. That
yes, we
play
do.
Drums.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do.
Most people probably don't know that about you. Or me.
Yeah.
So anyway, tell us about the music.
Before I came here to the United States, I was a drummer in an all-female band. It was a popular band. We were a one-hit wonder. After the one hit, I left because it just didn't feel like that was the direction I wanted to go. I wanted to study further, so I came here to study grad school. And so, but, you know, music has always been in my heart. And when I started 7 Mile, I had to have music, at least on the weekends. So I had music on the weekends, Fridays and Saturdays. Only until about 6 or 7 years ago, I started having music every night because I wanted the consistency of it. Although it's quite expensive to do so because I don't really charge a cover.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that has cemented what we have become. It's a nightly live music venue. I don't think a lot of people really know that still, but it's nice to know that you can go to a place and you know that there's music at night and there's quality music.
What I like about it is that just as the menu is the menu,
mm-hmm.
you know what you're going to get. So Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, you're going to get some jazz.
Yeah.
So there's a certain crowd that right. likes that and goes and listens to the jazz. Those are good nights for jazz, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Wednesday now you have reggae, right? Do you still
yes.
have reggae?
Yeah.
Thursday is the blues.
Mm-hmm.
Friday you can dance.
Yeah.
Saturday is a catch whatever, maybe
yeah.
dance, maybe not, but it's all good.
You got it down.
So I miss the consistent jam nights. That's where
the
I had the blues jam nights where I know 20, 30 people would show up for that. And they may have spent a lot of money in there, but they all wanted to play and they all hung out. And there's the vibe and the ambiance, I guess, of that.
Yeah.
That time.
Yes.
Not saying that they didn't eat or drink, but just I enjoyed that.
Yeah. In my business, and a lot of restaurateurs make this mistake, is to keep at it and to be consistent.
Yeah.
For example, when I first started offering lunch, my mentor, George, he said, just keep at it. Lunch is a lot harder than dinner because it's harder to go to you, you know, at lunch. It's easier to say, oh, let's just have dinner somewhere. It's harder for lunch because you're at work. You're going to have to go out of your way to go have lunch. But same with music. You just have to keep at it
mm-hmm.
and find that formula and just keep doing it until people like you actually know the schedule. And you just have to be patient. And if it feels right, just keep on doing it.
And even the changes, like the jam night, that keeps it interesting to change it up. Not to have the same person playing every Thursday night or every third Thursday or
yes.
every second Thursday.
Yes.
But to mix that up and maybe you know the genre, but maybe not who's going to be there. That's a good thing.
Thank you.
So you were voted for the best dog-friendly bar
yeah.
restaurant. Tell us about that. How did that happen and... what are the dogs drinking there?
We actually have dog beer there and dog cigars. They're not alcoholic drinks. But so interesting story, actually. We now have a patio.
And very nice patio, by the way.
Thank you, thank you. And we would not have been able to have that patio but for the city of Brisbane. And, well, they gave us the opportunity to serve outside, and that the council okayed that. And it's just wonderful to be in a city like this where they're very open-minded about business opportunities. Mm-hmm. So when they built the sidewalk, we applied for, you know, permit to serve outside. And so we built the gates and all that. And we saw an opportunity, not just to serve people outside because it's beautiful weather in Brisbane, but we also saw, hey, we can serve dogs here. And I guess there's more dog families than families with children, I think, in San Francisco. I thought it was a good market and another good opportunity.
Dogs are the new children.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's just sad, but oh well. So we started a dog menu. We basically serve what we have in the kitchen, just, you know, in the dog bowl, and give them a more special attention. We have a VID card too, like a very important dog card, where it's like a punch card for dogs. And if you buy a dog meal, you get a punch, and then your fifth meal is free. The dogs get special treatment where they get, you know, their own dog water and a free treat. But we've also started to launch selling dog cigars, which are dog treats, and dog beer, which is made of malt and really good ingredients for dogs. Absolutely no alcohol in it. But in February last year, I started that dog program, and I saw that there was a dog magazine that had awards to give out every February. And so I sought out to get that award by creating this big program for dogs. And in my pursuit of getting that award, I actually received the bigger award, which I didn't even know that voting was happening, which is with SF Weekly. So just 2 weeks ago, we won Best Dog Friendly Restaurant in the San Francisco Bay Area, and voted by people in San Francisco. And that's just within 1 year of putting in efforts into our dog program. And I'm just really blown away, because we didn't even know that the contest was running or the voting was happening. We didn't even ask anyone to vote for us. We were asking people to vote for us for the other award, which is just a small, you know, award for the dog magazine. But we were just really thrilled that we got the bigger prize.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. It just made my hair stand. And I just couldn't believe that we achieved that.
So now somebody, you hear somebody say, 7 Mile House is for the dogs, you'll know what they mean.
Exactly.
So Gina's here too. And Gina is helping you write a book. That, to me, has got to be fascinating.
Yeah.
Because the history in that place must just go run real, real deep. And I'm really looking forward to it, to reading it.
Yeah.
Tell us about it. And what kind of challenges have you had so far? And what kind of discoveries have you made that you might want to let us in on before the book comes out here?
Yeah. So years ago, I really wanted to start a book about 7 Mile. And it was really because people started talking to me about their experiences. And I felt like I need to capture that. So ever since I started 7 Mile, I've always had a notebook. And every time somebody told me that they want to tell me more about history, I would write their phone number down in my notebook. So I have this collection of phone numbers. I've always wanted to interview them. There's people who've been coming since they were 19, and they're like 80 now. There's just such great stories that I've always wanted to do this. And I just didn't think that anybody else was a better fit than writing the book with me than my cousin Gina. You know, we grew up together in the Philippines, but she's an award-winning editor in the Philippines. She's been an editor-in-chief of many magazines, and she's a very accomplished, you know, editor. So she's here with me for 5 weeks, and we're doing a lot of research.
Thank you, Van. I've been over.
So is this, how many times have you been here before this trip?
Before this trip, the Bay Area, maybe 2 or 3 times.
So this is an extended trip?
Yes, it's a working trip. I've not been around many tourist spots since I landed here at El Vanessa. So it's been libraries, it's been museums, it's been a lot of work. And it's been tough because I'm not from the area, right? So I have to put in more hours and more effort into understanding like geography and the history and the culture. And what we've discovered so far is really fascinating, all the stories. Originally, she just wanted a collection of stories from the regulars. You know, they come in, they say why they've been coming to the 7 Mile House. But it grew, and it as you said, it's got a deep history, so we've been covering a lot of facts about the place.
So have you been looking up like the archives of the Chronicle, San Francisco Chronicle,
yes,
for ads, maybe ads and
yes,
articles and that kind of thing? Is that easy to search, or do you have to, how much of that can you find online by their archives or whatever, or do they have archives for that?
Yes, they do. I think the San Francisco Chronicle goes back to 1860. So I've made my home in the historical section of the San Francisco Library for 2 days, and I've dug up old maps outlining where the Mexicans, the original land grants,
uh-huh,
were given, and I've seen a lot of articles with mentioning the old 7 Mile House and a lot of fights happened there.
A lot of fights.
It's like, it's fight after fight after fight. I just like to fight there. And
that's what the news is about.
Yeah.
It's about
the news
fights.
Is about a fight happening.
Always fights and gambling.
Yeah. Some names emerged that we weren't aware of in regard to the old owners. From what I know, initial research, the original owner was an Italian immigrant, Egidio Migeli. So he bought it. And then he passed it on to his friend, I think his brother-in-law, Palmiero Testa.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, there was a gap between this guy Testa and Camilo Stuhler, who Vanessa bought it from. And I found that between those years, maybe 1930s or 1940s until 1954, it was owned by a couple of Italian guys too, Lawrence Fulgoso and Sebastian Neri, were arrested for gambling, for illegal gambling.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. So a lot of fascinating facts and really, you know, just weird tidbits.
So what happened during Prohibition?
That is another gap that, that we have to find out. I think it became a gambling den during that time.
That's really, it's really exciting. And I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah.
It's just a piece of history. And, you know, it's so funny that so many people I hear in Brisbane say, oh, we need this, we need this, we need that. This is a resource and a place that I think is underutilized or understood by many locals.
Yeah.
You know, like I've had people, you know, I say, oh, let's go to 7 Mile for lunch. And somebody said, you go there? That's, isn't that kind of a scary place?
Yeah.
And so I think, where does that come from? How do they, you know, maybe because it's all sitting out there all by itself, you know, out there and looking like it's just maybe just a bar.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But it has so much more to offer, and I think people should know more about it and go give it a shot. So, do you have anything to add?
Yes, you do.
Yeah, I think Vanessa also wanted to put together this book to change his conceptions about the place.
Yeah.
Actually, from the great stories we've gathered so far, and from the wife of the of Al Flynn, who is
the former owner,
Camille Stuhler. It actually embodies the real meaning of pub, public house. It's a place where people come together and establish relationships, build those relationships, you know, meet new friends. And one story so far really touched our hearts. It was a story of Ron Moore.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he told us that he had been coming to 7 Mile House since he was 6 because his dad was a trucker who worked across the street. So it engendered a lot of good memories for him, seeing how hard his father worked and how his father bound the family together. So, you know, you come across these little beautiful stories, the micro histories of people that make 7 Mile House. So I think that's really fascinating. That's what makes the spirit of 7 Mile.
Great. You know, it's funny because our little spot downstairs, Madhouse Coffee, without the alcohol, you know, kind of serves as a living room for the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, come in and meet people, and those
yes.
relationships and those things that are that happen downstairs. I should probably start remembering, you know, and logging some of the things and happening down there. So maybe someday somebody will want to know about it.
Yeah,
but
sure.
I am really looking forward to the book.
Yay!
I know my son brings a dog over there.
Yes,
I'm looking forward to playing some music over there again. Okay, so yeah, there was one more thing we got to talk about. And that is, you know that I'm doing this podcast partly to shine a light on some of our local nonprofits and also to hear from interesting people with interesting stories in and around or connected to Brisbane. So I want to ask you again, we didn't talk about the Mighty Mutts.
Yes.
And that's the nonprofit that you're passionate about. And so why don't you tell us just a little bit about that?
So Mighty Mutts Rescue was founded here in Brisbane by Amanda Folds. She's from Brisbane, and in partnership with the Madrigal family, Jessica and Tommy. They have been saving a lot of dogs in the Bay Area and beyond. So we continue to contribute to their nonprofit. So if, for example, a customer buys a dog meal, a dollar of that goes to the rescue. So they're really good people. They just started about a year and a half ago, and they, you know, rescue dogs all over, and they find them, you know, beautiful homes to live in, and they're very dedicated to what they do, and they really genuinely love dogs. I mean, the Madrigal family alone, you know, they've been volunteering and working with Amanda at Mighty Mutts Rescue, and they've been fostering dogs as well. So if anybody out there wants to foster dogs, they don't want to commit, that's a nice small way to help, you know, the rescue. Plus, they're always accepting donations in kind as well for dog food or puppy mats, dog toys. So it's a great nonprofit that we partner with, and we're really happy. And they're just great people who just want to do good.
Kudos to Vanessa, Jessica, and Thomas. They used to work for us and in Madhouse for years, and a couple of great kids.
Yeah.
And they will always be kids to me, I guess. Well, I think Jessica started with us when she was 17.
Oh, my gosh.
So, anyway, that's all good. And again, thanks for coming in, and I look forward to having you back.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Coffee to Close. Coffee to Close is a fundraiser for our local nonprofits and charities in Brisbane. And I will be donating $100 per episode to one of the charities or nonprofits in town. Coffee to Close is also sponsored by Davis & Company Real Estate. You can find us at rondavis.com and Madhouse Coffee, which is madhousecoffee.com. Both are located in Uptown Brisbane at the top of the main business district on Visitation Avenue at 400 Visitation. Come pay us a visit. We'd love to see you.